Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. I have two guests with me today to discuss the COVID-19 vaccine rollout in Onondaga County. Onondaga County Executive Ryan McMahon returns to the program, along with Dr. David Page. Dr. Page practices medicine in Camillus with a focus on geriatrics. He's a past president of Family Care Medical Group and is the current president of the Onondaga County Medical Society and the board chair of the Health Advisory Committee for the Onondaga County Health Commissioner. Dr. Page, welcome to the program, and County Executive McMahon, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Well, County Executive McMahon, let's start with you, and just to set out for our listeners some basic facts, and I want to remind our listeners that the three of us are talking on Monday, March 29th. Things may change between now and when this airs, but County Executive McMahon, briefly, where are we currently regarding the eligibility criteria in Onondaga County, and how is that eligibility decided?
Yeah, so right now the state of New York has been working on eligibility. So they determine who is eligible. Certainly the vaccine supply has increased. So some of the initial pressures we had in the beginning of the rollout are no longer there. One of the challenges actually right now is we have a diverse state. Not all regions of the state have the same numbers of workforce. If you think about a couple of weeks ago, we had rollout of government public facing employees. That's a big group in New York City and Long Island. It's not that big of a group here. We vaccinated those groups in a day or two. So one of the problems is right now, if you think about it best, if you have comorbidities, there's various categories there. People really need to look to see if they qualify there. In addition to that, we've gone through, now we're down to 50 years old and above, as far as ages go. And I think the state's going to get away from the workforce titles and stick to the ages moving forward. But we're having a hard time vaccinating 50-year-olds and above because many 50-year-olds have comorbidities. So what we have done here in the county, because we will never waste a shot. I have said this, I don't try to be obnoxious about it, but I don't care what the state says. I'm not going to return vaccine back to them, and we're never going to waste a shot. Every American citizen has a right to this shot. So we have pre-registration signups for anyone who's between the age of 30 and 50 right now. So we're gathering thousands of people on that list. And at the end of the day, if we have cancellations or we have extra vaccine, we send an email and tell these folks to come get a shot. Or if, say, for example, today's Monday, say our appointments for Wednesday this week, we just can't fill appointments. I'm paying 50 vaccinators, so we want them to vaccinate people. So we'll then send an email there. But right now, I think eligibility needs to open up to really anybody, 16 and above for the Pfizer shot, 18 and above for the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, specifically because if you look at where our cases are coming from now, the vaccinated populations are no longer driving cases, which is very good news, but our younger populations are driving cases, and we need to get them vaccinated.
Let me just ask a couple quick clarifying questions before I go to Dr. Page with a different question, but just to make sure that we all understand the eligibility criteria in a formal sense, that's done at the state level then, correct?
It is. And then okay. The president of the United States said on May 1, all states have to have their rollouts opened up to everybody at that point. We're just at a point now where we really need to open it up to everybody now.
And you mentioned comorbidity, just for our listeners, and you're talking about underlying conditions such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and so on, correct?
Yeah. And again, the BMI, right, is an index which looks at your weight. Mm-hmm. And many, many people, believe it or not, who are in decent shape actually qualify for that. They just don't think to look at that. And so we've been encouraging people to look at that too. As we've done a nice job vaccinating here. About 45% of our adult population has been vaccinated. Again, we'll vaccinate another 10, 12,000 people in the county this week.
So Dr. Page, how would you evaluate the rollout of the vaccine so far from your perspective and from your perch?
Yeah, I think the rollout's actually done very well in the county. I think County Executive McMahon and Dr. Gupta, who's the health commissioner, have done a very good job of getting the rollout done. my biggest frustration, which actually today is going to end that frustration, is not being able to have vaccine to deliver in my office. I do think there's a significant number of my patients that are just not going to go downtown. They're not going to go to a mass vaccination site to get the vaccine. So I do think that having as many channels opened up as possible is where we should be. And as of today, which is different than when we chatted, even a week ago, we have vaccine in my office today. So we're getting some from the state. We also got some from the health commissioner. So she's done a very nice job now that the pressure is a little bit off on the mass vaccination sites to be able to deliver it in our office. So I think we've done a good job. We have a lot to be proud of.
So what is the mechanism then now for providing vaccines directly to doctors' offices? You had to apply, as I recall, to qualify, but were there other things involved?
Well, there's two ways to get vaccine. The first way is you go through a registration process with the state of New York, which is really not a lot different than a lot of primary care doctors have done forever for the free vaccine program that the state has. So to be in the free vaccine program means that we're able to manage the both the Moderna vaccine and the J&J vaccine now. And then the second channel that's opened up really as of the last week is that when the health department thinks they have extra doses that those doses are now being made available to offices that can deliver them as well, assuming they've got all their credentialing in place with the state of New York. So we now have an additional conduit. So those are the two ways, which is very nice.
And County Executive McMahon, on the second way that the doctor just described, then is that in the county's hands to make those decisions? Who gets what?
It is. So each week, Dr. Gupta, myself, and Ann Rooney, who's the deputy county executive that oversees human services, we meet and we strategize on what our rollout plan is, and we'll have the ability to redirect vaccine. And specifically, Grant, we're getting to the point where micro-targeting almost is going to become necessary at some point here. Once we open up the gate, so the quicker we open it up, and all the willing get vaccinated, then we can really dive into the data and figure out who hasn't been vaccinated and what's the best point of distribution. To Dr. Page's point, some people, he's correct, some people want to go to the doctor's office. They've been eligible for a long period of time and they've been waiting. But you really, it's tough to get to that point and look at data and say, this is a problem, we need to do this, until you vaccinate all the willing. And so I think we're getting to that point. We have lots of points of distribution. I just saw the list. So multiple doctors' offices received it this week. The pharmacies continue to receive it. We received about 6,000 doses for the next vaccine week as well. So in the fairgrounds, which we help staff, has probably over 10,000 doses. So we're making great strides here. And again, I will be a broken record on this. The eligibility really does need to open up.
I'm Grant Reher. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and I'm speaking with Onondaga County Executive Ryan McMahon and Camillus Family Medicine Doctor David Page. County Executive, let me stick with you, and I'll come back to the doctor again on this. But I think the doctor spoke to this kind of indirectly earlier, but there has been a lot of reporting nationwide on disparities in people getting the vaccine, either access to it or, as you just mentioned, the willingness to get it. And they cut along different lines, race and income, among other ways in which the data slice up there. How do you think the county's done with that particular aspect of it?
Yeah, we actually track our from our pod. If you think of our pod, it's the On Center, and we do pop-up clinics. We've tracked this data. We've intentionally gone into historically communities that haven't participated with hesitancy, specifically our African-American community, our new American communities. If you look at our data from our pod, the African-American population in the county is about 10.6%. We are actually close to 9% participation out of our numbers, which at one point was 2%. And then after our efforts has gotten there, our Asian-American community, which a lot of our new American communities are there, is actually running a little bit above the population for the county. We have work to do in our Latino and Hispanic communities. And so when we look at our pop-up clinics each week, we're focused in on targeting those areas and working with credible messengers, whether it's at the Boys and Girls Clubs, whether it is at a church, whether it's at a community center, a school, we've done all of that. And so we are really proud of the work we've done there. One of the other things that we're starting to see, Grant, and again, we really need to get through everybody who's willing, is we're now seeing some sort of anecdotal evidence that it's not just income or race-based hesitancy, but also ideology. And so we're starting to see those who tend to be more politically conservative being more hesitant with the vaccine right now as well. And so the only way you can have really good marketing efforts to address hesitancy, remember, some people just won't get it. But if we get to the levels we need to in our community, that will be okay. But to really target, micro-target the hesitancy issue, we need to really know where the real data is in the zip codes to figure out good strategies.
Dr. Page, let me ask you a question. Oh, you wanted to jump in on that.
I was just going to I was going to piggyback a little bit on vaccine hesitancy. You know, there was a, and I can't remember where I heard it. I'm pretty sure it was probably on NPR. That they had a focus group on conservative vaccine hesitant people. And they went through a variety of different scenarios about how to convince this group of patients to get vaccinated. And the only thing that really made any would make any difference to this group of people was having to have a conversation with their physician. And if their physician recommended that they get the vaccine, then they were much more likely to get the vaccine. And I do think that echoes my experience in my office. I have a growing number, because everybody's been vaccinated, right? Of vaccine hesitant people. And if you have a conversation with them and really explain to them, you know, what the pros and cons are and the risks and the benefits, you can get a tremendous number of those people vaccinated. And now that we have vaccine in my office, I'll be able to vaccinate those people, hopefully more or less on the fly, but certainly within a day or so, you still have to group people up for the vaccine. So I've been trumpeting and talking with Albany in my role as the president of Medical Society since the vaccine was available about the need to get it into physicians' office. And now that you've got this vaccine hesitant population that's becoming more dominant and who has not been vaccinated, I think it's even more important that the vaccine gets rolled out to physician offices.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Dr. David Page, president of the Onondaga County Medical Society, and Onondaga County Executive Ryan McMahon. And we're discussing the COVID-19 vaccine rollout. Dr. Page, let me ask you this question about another way in which I understand that the vaccine has been allocated up to this point, and that's that doctor's offices, prior to getting the vaccine directly now, which you've been speaking about, prior to that, they were allocated a certain number of places and these county mechanisms and other places where you could sort of give the patient that was most in need at your practice that spot. Is that basically correct?
Yeah, there was, I think as everybody is trying to figure out how to get physicians engaged and get, you know, maybe more hesitant populations engaged, I do think that the county executive and Dr. Gupta came up with the idea to appropriate certain numbers of slots to probably bigger groups or groups that have more, you know, more managerial expertise on site so that they could actually get people vaccinated. And we did that, my office did that, and we were able to book a number of patients. It was a very laborious process, I have to tell you. And I don't know if the county executive has experienced that same thing with trying to call people up.
We'll get into that in a minute, okay. But let me ask a question related to that. It has to do with county lines, you know, and one of the things that the vaccine brings up is different levels of government and boundaries between different jurisdictions. And so let's say that Dr. Page has a patient that's seeing him, but the patient lives in another county. Yet Dr. Page thinks that this person really is in need of the vaccine, hasn't gotten it yet. Does the county line make it, can a resident of Oneida County get a vaccine and on a dog? How does that work?
Yeah, so they do. And again, with our supply, we try to target county residents, but there's many residents outside of Onondaga County and Central New York as a whole who spend a lot of time in Onondaga County, or maybe they teach in our schools and have it. So from the standpoint, we have residents that go to Madison County and Cayuga County to get shots too, especially in the beginning when the vaccine became eligible to the initial groups. So we try to focus in on Onondaga County. This was more of a challenge in the beginning days when the supply was limited. Now the other counties as well have more supply where they've actually opened up their pre-registration to larger groups than we have because they're smaller and they need to find more people. To Dr. Page's point to your previous question, though, his practice was wonderful to work with. When we had comorbidities open up, one of the things that we saw is that there were so many people that would now qualify. How do we target the essentially those most at risk to hospitalizations, those who had multiple conditions? And instead of us trying to figure that out, the doctors know their patients. And so we asked the doctors to do just that. We'll reserve you slots at the On Center. We know all your patients mean the world to you, just like all my constituents do. But the goal in the beginning of this was to prevent hospitalizations and loss of life. And that means our seniors and those who have multiple existing conditions. And so that's kind of how we came up with that system. It worked well. And then as supply continued to increase, those who were eligible with comorbidities had ample avenues to get shots.
So I want to come back to the vaccine hesitancy and those who are reluctant to get the vaccine. County Executive, you mentioned, and this has been well reported on, I think, in the press, but you mentioned the political conservatives being more likely to be hesitant to get the vaccine. It's just one particular factoid, but I'm going to mention it here. The only thing I've seen publicly, and it was a post-it put onto the teller's box when you drive up for the drive-up teller at a bank, there was an anti-vaccine message that had been printed up. It wasn't just someone writing on it. And it was clearly, though, coming from the left in terms of the other things that were on the post-it, or at least that was the way it was presented. And that surprised me. But nonetheless, I was surprised to even see something basically telling me not to get the vaccine right there at my bank, stuck on a little post-it. Dr. Page, are you seeing any kind of pattern in the vaccine hesitancy in this area that you can put in terms of a political point of view or any other kind of way of figuring out who these people are?
I obviously, I don't know my patients' political views, or I don't know many of my patients' political views. I do find that it's people that are, they're probably not as widely read. They're probably, so they're not consuming information from, I don't think, from enough sources to really develop a really good opinion about whether they should get vaccinated or not. It's probably would be my takeaway. I think that people that watch certain news outlets get a certain bias and they adopt those biases. And then if they're not widely read, they don't have any way to, there's no check on that bias.
And County Executive McMahon, are you seeing anything firsthand that gives you an idea of what's going on here regarding that?
Yeah, so when you think about the ideology piece of this, right, not, you know, traditionally some of the minority communities have very good reasons to be hesitancy based off our history, mm-hmm. and we're working through that. But one of the things is, if you think about it, Graham, why do we get the vaccine, right? So we get the vaccine so we don't get sick, to avoid hospitalizations, and certainly to avoid loss of life. But also we get the vaccine it's the tool to get our lives back. And so part of the challenge is for those who may have hesitancy, they're looking at some of the indecision at the larger government levels about just that, getting your lives back. The idea that you vaccinating, you still may not be able to go do certain things suggests that maybe you don't have confidence in the vaccine. I've always said either the vaccine works or it doesn't. If it works and everybody gets vaccinated, it shouldn't be an issue about what's going on in July or August related to some of the traditional gatherings and things of that nature. So I think that's part of it. People they're hesitant. They might not buy into it. They might be younger. And they then say, well, why should I even get it if I can't go and spend time the way I could before? So I think the federal government and the state government need to do a much better job talking about when some of the regulations are going to go away, understanding some of them, you know, maybe precautionary for a period of time.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guests are Onondaga County Executive Ryan McMahon and Dr. David Page. All right, I want to come back to something, Dr. Page, you mentioned earlier, which is this question of how difficult it is to register and sort of what do you go through in order to get either get yourself or get patients registered. And I'm going to base it on my own experience here of getting the vaccine. And first of all, County Executive McMahon, to your point about the reluctant, I have to say, I was expecting to really feel good about getting the vaccine after I got it. I was looking forward to it. I underestimated just how good I felt afterwards. I'm still following all the precautions, but it really sort of helped to silence the B-roll of anxiety in the back of my brain. So I highly recommend it on a number of different reasons. But I have to say, though, my own experience of signing up for the vaccine, I mean, I'm pretty well educated. I'm used to being online. Some days I feel like I live on email. But nonetheless, it was easy for me to imagine someone being too intimidated by all that to follow through and to persist and to just kind of feel overwhelmed by it all. There's obviously no simple answer to that, but what are you in the county thinking of trying to help with that particular issue?
Yeah, so you have a couple issues, right? So one being, especially with our senior population in the beginning, we created a waiting list called OnList, where we actually had phone banks for, these are seniors who are not really tech savvy. And I'm a 41-year-old who's not really that tech savvy. And so the essentially we paid for phone banks to register people, pre-register them. And then when slots would become available, we would email them, but understanding that they weren't that tech savvy or may only check email once or twice a day, we would then call them as well. So that was one thing we did. Right now we're working with our partners in the deaf and hearing impaired community to help register people. And then you work with various pop-up clinics. We worked a lot with our developmental disabled community to get specifically people registered and provide the services at the on center. So there's a lot you do, but when you look at everything we did, Grant, as a society, everything is online now. And so it was really, there's no way to avoid that with the way that all the technologies interface. It's how can we help those who can't use it, get it. And the other thing too, that the pandemic has highlighted is the digital divide in our rural communities and part of our urban communities. And that's something from a policy side we're gonna tackle head on. We're not gonna wait for leadership from other governments anymore.
We've just got about four minutes left or so. Dr. Page, I wanna let you make a quick comment on that, but then I do wanna try to squeeze in two more questions. So go ahead.
Yeah, I would just echo you. Given my experience of doing telemedicine for the past year, there's a tremendous number of people, most of my older patients that are just either they've got very dated equipment, you know, they got very dated online equipment, or they don't have any, they have no online access. They never have had online access. So I do think while there's certainly a disadvantaged population that have, that have access issues, there's also a tremendous number of my patients that are older that still have access issues.
So just squeeze a couple more questions here quickly, Dr. Page, I'll ask you this one. I've heard some reports predicting that we'll be at herd immunity. That's that threshold where enough people have either had the virus or been vaccinated so that it no longer really spreads. We'll reach that by the summer, the middle of the summer. Do you think that's too optimistic, or does that sound about right to you?
I think the way the county's going, I don't think it's an unrealistic expectation to think we're going to be there. I do think that, you know, so if you know, we're at 41% of the county that's been vaccinated, and you've got, who knows, 15% of the population that's had COVID, 15 to 20% of the population that's had COVID that has not been diagnosed. You know, you're at 55, 56%. So getting another 14, 15% to get us over the 70% hurdle. You know, it depends what day of the week you hear Dr. Fauci. You know, some days it's 70, some days it's 90. But yeah, get over the 70% hurdle, I think, is very doable.
So we've got just a couple minutes left, and I did want to ask this last question to both of you, and it's a more personal question, if I could. County Executive, you've been very open about how this pandemic has affected you and your health personally, and you've previously shared aspects of that with the public. So I wanted to ask each of you, and County Executive, start with you. How are you holding up? I mean, how are you doing right now? I think people would be interested to know that.
Yeah, so I health-wise, I'm doing better. My vision is still in really bad shape. So I still have double vision. Actually, it was driven, the vaccination rollout was probably the most pressure we felt throughout the whole pandemic, even if you think about what it was like in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it impacted my health. I wasn't taking care of myself during that. And certainly I had an event that caused me to have serious vision impairments right now. So I think the one key thing is that we all have different levels of responsibility in our own personal lives and employment, and we just need to take care of ourselves. And it's okay to ask for help. Especially on mental health right now, Grant, we're really concerned about what we're seeing with that. And so I'm doing better physically. I feel better. I still have vision issues. My doctors tell me my eyesight's about 55% back to where it needs to be.
Mm. All right. Well, we'll have good thoughts for you. And Dr. Page, I imagine this has been stressful for you too. We just have a few seconds left. How are you holding up?
Well, I hopefully we're emerging. I will say this is on many levels, just the emotional toll of taking care of your patients and the economic toll of trying to run a business. It's been a extraordinarily tough year. But hopefully we are getting to the other side of things. My practice is pretty much running, at least volume-wise, is running to normal. So that's good. And I've got a couple of vacations I booked because I've got to get out of town. So that's gives me something to look forward to, it'll be a very long time. So I think we've rounded the corner. And I'm optimistic that my life will come back to normalcy, whatever that means.
Well, here's hoping that's true. And I want to just thank both of you, not only for taking the time here to speak with me today, but for the public service roles that you are providing, County Executive, especially under a lot of pressure, and Dr. Page. That was Dr. David Page and Onondaga County Executive Ryan McMahon. Again, thanks to both of you for making the time.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Mark Lipponier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.